KXLU 88.9 FM in LA, KXLU.com all around the world. Coming to you from the Loyola Marymount University campus in Westchester, sun's about to set. Thank you, Ernesto, for another great show. We love follow you. Such beautiful music. I'm Mystic Pete. The name of the show is the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I have a couple of very special guests in studio today, and a third one on his way. I have Marshall McDaniel, Michelle Hasso, and then coming in a little while is Christopher Glenn Gilstrap, and they are from the Theatricum Botanicum up in Topanga. And if you haven't heard about them, well, you are about to. It's just this beautiful venue that's been there for decades, just charming outdoor venue. And well, Marshall, why don't you introduce yourself and just say a word, and we'll just go from there.
What's happening, Pete? So glad to be here and be on the show with you. Yes, Theatricum Botanicum is this beautiful venue up in Topanga Canyon, and that's where I grew up. I grew up there on the grounds of the theater, and I'm part of the family that runs the theater now in our, I believe, 53rd season. And I haven't been there for every season, but I was there in minus seasons before I was even born, in my mother's stomach on stage. So it's a long, lifelong passion to be a part of this theater.
And you're one of the directors and producers and actors up there, and a cello player,
yes.
Which makes you very legit.
Yes, I am a legit cello player that went to college in Germany to learn the cello, but I am the music director for the Theatricum. So I am sort of in charge of all things musical at the theater, including this concert series, this performance series that we have Under the Oaks that is coming up now every Thursday in September.
Well, and by the way, this song I played after my theme song is called September Song. That was written by Kurt Weill, W-E-I-L-L, and sung by Old Blue Eyes, none other than Frank Sinatra. Boy, that's a beautiful song. And I play that because Michelle Hasso, J-A-S-S-O, is putting on a show on Thursday, September 18th at the Theatricum Botanicum that features music by Kurt Weill. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Pete. So great to see you.
You both have beautiful radio voices, okay.
Oh, you're good. Just saying that.
Oh, no, you say that to all the girls.
Yeah. Well, say a word about yourself, Michelle.
Oh, well, this is my second season at Theatricum. I am a native Angeleno. I was gone for a while, spent some time in the San Francisco Bay Area, and then about 7 years in Chicago doing theater, and some opera as well. I have an opera background. So Yeah, this is my second Theatricum season. As you said, it's such a beautiful space. I was pretty blown away by it, honestly. I just happened to see an audition come up for their season generals last year. And I'm like, I've never heard of this place before. And I roll up, and it is breathtaking. It truly is. It's a gorgeous outdoor amphitheater, seats 300-ish, right? Mm-hmm. And they do a full 5-show repertory season. It's a true repertory company in a way that's really not done in this country anymore. We don't do theater this way anymore, where we run 5 shows and rep all summer long, you know, and of course it's a long summer here. So, so I did 2 shows on the main stage last year and participated in the Dylan concert as part of the Under the Oaks series. And then I've been a huge fan and proponent of Kurt Weill for many years. My professional opera debut was with Portland Opera. We did a production of Street Scene, which I'm so incredibly blessed, because no one ever does that show, because it's very difficult to produce. It's huge, calls for an enormous cast and a huge set. So nobody ever produces it. So I was very fortunate. And that was in my, you know, young formative years. And my voice teacher at the time was on stage with me, and it was a really incredible experience. And that's what birthed my love for Kurt Weill. And then in San Francisco, myself and a group of like-minded singer friends founded the Kurt Weill Project, where we just concertized and did Kurt Weill in all different settings, all different themes. So I'm going to be bringing that love to the Theatricum stage. At the time that I was asked to do this show, I was doing another show, Berlin im Licht, with a wonderful friend and collaborator of mine, Aaron Benham, who I lost to New York City. So I booked the date, and then he left. And I went, okay, I need new collaborators. And just so happens that this unbelievably talented actor, singer, director, friend of mine, Andrew Celio, Seglio is what he says, but it's Celio, he's Sicilian. Anyway, just happened to waltz back into my life, and turns out he had been living a mile apart, away from me for a year, and we didn't know. So we reconnected, and I had just lost my collaborator, and I thought, oh, you should direct me. And then I thought, no, you should be in it. And then we had a wonderful pianist lined up whom we lost. And so we got another pianist. Antonius Nazareth is his name. How metal a name is that? And he is brilliant, Juilliard trained, grew up in Vienna, speaks fluent German and French. And the program is in English and German and French. So he has been an incredible addition to the group. So this particular show is more of a survey. And the Kurt Weill cabaret that I've done in the past, for one thing, it's been very small and intimate. And for another, it's been very focused on one specific thing, like songs of ships in the sea, Weill and Brecht. You know, specific, because his opus is so massive, you know, over 300 individual songs. So we would kind of, I'd fish my way through and find some little pocket to really focus in on. But for this, since Theatricum is such a large stage and it's such a big house and it's such a vast, open, incredible space, I wanted to just really take people on a journey and more of a survey of his whole life. And with the backdrop of where he was born and how he was raised, and also the other fascinating thing about Kurt Weill is that in addition to writing music every single day of his life, he also wrote letters, correspondence every single day of his life. So about 650 pieces of correspondence letters still exist, and about 400 of those are between he and Lotte Lenya, his twice wife, married, divorced, married again, and longtime 25-year collaborator and muse. So basically, after reading, sifting through these letters and brainstorming, Andrew and I decided, why not focus on their relationship and the correspondence between them? But we're still taking it from his origins in Berlin through his two-year exile in Paris, and then finally landing in New York City, where he worked with all the Broadway giants of the Golden Age era, and where he would eventually die in 1950 at the age of 50. So, yeah, it's a new show. It's a brand new show, and we're super excited.
I'm a big fan of Kurt Weill. There's a lot we can talk about, but just to back up a second, so the Theatricum puts on regular plays. We have Shakespeare, several Shakespeare plays this summer. You have The Seagull by Chekhov, and Marshall, you're a director there and producer and an actor, but you're also producing this series called Under the Oaks, and it features a different theme every week. You did one last week. You're doing one this coming Thursday. It's a composer's collective. And then after that, we have the Kurt Weill show with Michelle. And then after that, a Joni Mitchell show. Well, let's talk about it generally, but we're going to come back to Kurt Weill because I'm a little obsessed with him, and I can't wait to see your show.
No, of course. Yes, the Theatricum is a very special place. I was thinking, what's his name again? Antonius?
Nazareth.
Antonius Nazareth, yes. No, because you guys were doing a rehearsal the other day, and I kept thinking about the like look on his face, his expression when he came to the place, because it's worth seeing the space itself, because people are always just getting their mind blown just by being there. And I could tell he was trying to focus on the rehearsal, but just being in the space, there's something very magical about the space. And just looking at his eyes, something about doing the arts in the wild, in the forest, amongst the crickets and the owls and occasional coyotes or the frogs, all the nature is directly there next to the stage. It's like in the stage, there's oak trees in the stage. And there's shockingly few places, I think, in the world where you can experience the arts at a high level, like in a setting like that, that is so wild and natural. And I think that's a really strong part of the theater experience there in Topanga. But the Theatricum is the oldest repertory theater in Los Angeles, which, if you don't know what that means, that just means we do multiple shows at the same time. So they'll rehearse one show, it'll open, and then they'll instantly just start rehearsing the next show the next week. And by the end of the summer, there's four or five plays that are all running at the same time. So you could come for the weekend and watch four or five different plays that weekend. And that's something that's done still in Europe and a lot of other places, but most places in the United States have stopped using this format. And so it's something very special for Los Angeles and just theater in general to still be doing this. And so that's what's going on most of the season are the plays. Shakespeare's always been the focus. We're always doing Midsummer Night's Dream and some other Shakespeare. And yeah, this year we're doing some Chekhov, usually some others, Tennessee Williams and those kind of modern classics or new works. Sometimes my aunt, the artistic director, writes something new. So there's always something different going on with those repertory plays. But then this concert series or this performance series at the end of the season is sort of been going on, I think, not the entire time, but at least for 10, 15, maybe 20 years. And this is a chance for the company members and sometimes the community members and just also who's interested to have a chance to have one-off performances, not in repertoire. And so this has been a bunch of different things. I mean, in recent years, who came through? We had Andrew Schulman, who was also Topanga Canyon resident from, he's a cellist with LA Chamber Orchestra. He came and played a recital. The Pacific Trio, which is with John Waltz and the LA Opera members, he came and played
John
a show.
John Waltz has been on my show.
Oh, he's been on your show. Yeah, no, because I play in the LA Opera sometimes, and so John is a colleague. He's a great guy.
Deep man, yeah.
Yeah.
Great cellist.
No, and he has, I'm not sure if they're still playing together, but he has a piano trio with Roger Wilkie, and they came and played a show. And that's another part of the family history line that my great-grandmother was a concert violinist, Helen Ware, one of the earliest female soloists in the country. She had a Stradivarius and toured around and published with Schott and everything. So there's classical music in the family line, and I've always felt it's kind of important to carry that torch and bring classical music into the canyon. And so, yeah, so that's historically something we've been doing there. And
well, this is a real gem, and if people haven't been there, this is like a very special Los Angeles location that is very different from the 2-inch by 5-inch screen on your phone.
Right.
You can go and sit outside in beautiful nature in Topanga Canyon. It feels like it was 1,000 years ago. I mean, aside from benches, it's like pristine.
Yeah.
And this was actually formed originally by Will Gear, who, if you've seen older TV shows, like really ancient stuff, like from when I was a kid, there was the Waltons, and he played the grandpa. Well, I watched it every week, and he bought this property, and now his
daughter.
And so she took it over. It has a really storied history. Will Gear has a very interesting story himself. He was persecuted in McCarthyism and attacked and was ruined, basically, by the witch hunts of Joe McCarthy. But anyway, he reemerged with this remarkable location, and it's still with us, and you're part of this lineage, Marshall.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. No, there's a lot of threads in the family, and one of those is organizing for unions and supporting labor, and that's another one of the shows that we're doing this year. It's called Strife, which is about the battle between management and unions and the workers that are involved in that. And that's been a part of the family history and something that Will Gear was dealing with. And we continue to try to talk about and bring attention to. The theater has been that mix of like high level artists, but also sort of misfits and like rebels and renegades that would come together in the woods to make some art. And that continues to this day.
Well, let's take a little musical break, and then we'll get back to the talking. Okay, we are back here at KXLU of Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I have in studio people from the Theatricum Botanicum, Marshall McDaniel, Michelle Hasso, and coming soon, hopefully, Christopher Glenn Gilstrap. Apparently, the 405 is being repaved and interfering with the arts. How dare they? Well, Michelle, so we just heard a piece from Kurt Weill's Three Penny Opera, and that was called Tango Ballade or Polly's Song. And I just saw the original movie version, I guess from early
1930s. 32,
with Lotta Lenya. And you know, it's funny because I've heard her voice so many times and a big admirer, but in the movie she's kind of young. I mean, she really hasn't come into her own, and it was funny to see this voice I had loved was a little immature in the movie.
Yes,
isn't that something? But it's a powerful piece, and if you haven't seen the Three Penny Opera, well, that was music from it, and there are songs. There's the orchestral suite, which we just played. Well, I'll let you take it from there. Explain a little about Kurt Weill or Bertolt Brecht, and they had to flee Nazism, and they came to Hollywood. You know this story better, and how it all connects with your show in a week and a half.
Absolutely. It's just such a fascinating story. So Kurt Weill was born in 1900 in Dessau, Germany, born Jewish in Germany, and came from a rather affluent family. He was the son of a cantor, grew up with music, and was a piano prodigy at an early age, studied composition under Busoni. He showed a lot of promise as a musical talent from a very early age. Started writing songs and was really interested in opera, but more music theater, you know, what we know today as being like more musical theater, where there's spoken text and dialogue and that kind of thing intermixed with the singing. He was more into the theatrical part of it. So in 1927, he meets Bertolt Brecht, who, of course, was already writing and already making a name for himself, and specifically...
Playwright, yes.
Yes, playwright. And he too, interestingly enough, these two men both came from affluent families, but Brecht was very much a champion of the working class, of the proletariat, and very firmly believed that art should be for everyone, that it should not be an elitist craft. And this is where he and Weill saw eye to eye. At first, they had their difficulties. They did work together pretty closely for 5 years. By the end of it, they hated each other. But they did create some incredible works, such as the Threepenny Opera, which premiered in 1927, and was a it came from Beggar's Opera in terms of like the storyline, but they called it Threepenny Opera because that was kind of what they had envisioned in their epic theater, that it should be for everyone, and that the arts and theater and music should be a revolution, should be in rebellion to the status quo, to oppressors, and it should be for the working class, and it should be for the people. So they got themselves in a lot of trouble with the institutions of the time. Their works would be, performances would be picketed by brown coats. And eventually, in 1933, when Hitler was appointed chancellor, then he and Brecht and the other epic theater folks got themselves on a hit list. And so one frantic night in March of 1933, there was a phone call in the middle of the night. We still don't know exactly who it was. I think it was Elizabeth Hauptmann, but we don't know for certain who made the phone call. But he got a warning call in the middle of the night that he was going to be arrested and probably killed. And so friends drove him to the German border in the middle of the night, literally with the clothes on his back. And he got on a plane to Paris, and he never stepped foot in Germany again.
Just to interject, Germany, particularly Berlin, in the late 1920s, early 1930s, was just this explosive scene of art and music and ideas, you know, Bauhaus and sexuality. It was like an exciting place in the clubs. A lot was happening. And what Hitler came in and shut it all down. But you can see this documented well in a musical theater called Cabaret. It's also a movie with Liza Minnelli. But they show how this was like a rebirth of, well, just it was an exciting time, you know. And and until Hitler came in and just ruined the party. But go ahead.
Did indeed. Yes. So, so another, of course, huge artistic center of the time was Paris. And Weill had already established a bit of a name for himself in Paris because there were French translations of Threepenny Opera that had made the rounds in Paris. So he'd already had a name. Pretty much as soon as he got there, he started, you know, getting to work. He did a lot of orchestral works, finished a lot of orchestral works at the time, including his Second Symphony, and also wrote a lot of songs in the chanson, you know, French cabaret style that he really loved, and wrote some really beautiful songs, individual songs, wrote for Jacques Duval's Marie Galante, but then also standalone songs. And so some of those are featured in my show as well. I really love singing in French. It's like my favorite language to sing in. I love German too, but I really love singing in French. So I hadn't really had the opportunity to explore too many of his French songs. So I'm really excited about that chapter.
So that's September 18th, Thursday, 7:30 p.m. at the Theatricum Botanicum.
Yes.
You can go to theatricum.com for more information.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So you've got a whole evening and under the oak trees,
mm-hmm.
and beautiful summer night. It's just been so lovely here in L.A. Well, particularly by the beach, but it'll be nice. Well, so Marshall, you guys survived the fires and gentrification, and well, talk to me a little bit more about the theater. It's this beloved institution.
Yeah, no, it's been there all this time and sort of under constant threat. If anybody here listening knows anything about Topanga Canyon, it's a very special place for a lot of reasons. But part of that is the like precariousness of it being in this canyon with water flowing through it and just natural sort of soft sandy mountains. Everything sort of shifts and moves and is vulnerable to the weather patterns. And so there's been a lot of, the whole time I was growing up, there was always floods and an occasional earthquake and an occasional fire. Fires were happening basically the entire time. This most recent fire, obviously the most catastrophic, but I think I've evacuated probably 5 or 6 times through my life. That's just sort of par for the course. And I think if you live in Topanga, that's part of the experience and almost like the thrill of like, this could all go up in smoke at any minute. That's sort of the bargain that you make. But that's all. That's what also makes being there and also this theater sort of like very precious, because it is adaptable, but also vulnerable. And I think that's had an effect on the people that live there and also the way the theater's run and sort of the programming there. Yeah. And so this most recent fire, I personally had to evacuate because I was, you know, I lived there at the theater and we were evacuated for 2 weeks or so and didn't know exactly what was going on in those 2 weeks, whether the theater was still there. Luckily it was. Luckily most of Topanga survived these recent fires. And a lot of like LA and the world has moved on from this from this most recent.
We're already forgetting about it.
Yeah.
About you guys.
That's what's really wild. I mean, if you drive around the Palisades or Malibu, you still see the signs everywhere. It's very apparent that these fires did happen, in fact. But I think a lot of people have just sort of moved on with their lives and aren't really thinking about it a whole lot. But I know quite a few people that were affected and lost everything in these most recent fires. And that's, yeah, for this next Thursday, that's what I'm really wanted to highlight sort of all year is knowing these musicians that lost their homes and lost sort of everything, their studios and manuscripts and sort of a life's work in these recent fires. And I wanted to support them in some way just by presenting their music and highlighting them. And because, yeah, I think it's important that people still remember this.
Well, talk about the show on September 11th.
So on September 11th, which is another sort of chilling synchronicity that it's on September 11th because that's sort of what LA just went through, the fire version. So we'll be doing this show. It's not 100% people that lost their homes in the fires, but almost everybody that's going to be up on stage and the music that we're presenting is from people that lost their homes in these most recent fires. And so, yeah, we have people like David Schwartz, one of my favorite composers, even before I met him as a person. He did music for Deadwood and Arrested Development and a bunch of other shows and music that you've definitely heard if you've watched TV in the last, 10, 15 years. The other composers, close friend of mine, Matthew Ferraro, who wrote for Futurama and also The Vatican, he lost his home. Duncan Toom, who has scored so many episodes of Chef's Table, also lost his home in Altadena. Star Parodi. It's a long list. Wow. And these are all composers that I sort of know personally and reached out to them and asked them if they'd be willing to offer up some of their music so their name could get highlighted and sort of just awareness like rekindled, no pun intended, to this issue, because people are still suffering. They haven't been able to find really a new place to live or build their new studio yet, and just want to continue to bring awareness to the challenge that is rebuilding after this recent event.
Well, it's this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at the Theatricum. And just allow a few extra minutes because getting up to Topanga Canyon Boulevard is still a little bit challenging. I mean, it's definitely open. But
Yeah, the canyon is open, but it's still sort of a one-way only if you're coming from the ocean side. So, yeah, definitely leave a little bit of time. But I think it's going to be a very special show. There's Some of the composers have written brand new arrangements just for this concert. There's some original music that was written just for this concert, and this might be the only chance that you would have to hear some of this great music from these great composers.
Actual live music in LA instead of on a little tinny speaker from your phone. Imagine that.
No shade to radio or streaming or anything else, but music is better in person, I got to say. That's my personal opinion.
Well, the show I did last, I have a DJ show called In a Dream, just pitching my stuff.
Oh, obviously,
you know.
Yeah, obviously.
No, but the fellow owns Think Space Gallery, Mr. Number Wonderful, and we're all kind of doing the same thing, building community, doing art because we love art, and hopefully we can pay the bills on top of that. But it's harder these days to be an artist because there's so many things happening on so many levels to get people to come out and attend a live event or to get somebody to buy artwork. You know, it's more of a challenge these days, but I really would encourage people to see live theater, go buy artwork. You know, if your friend has a CD, which is this round plastic thing that we had in the old days, pay them $10 and buy their CD. You know what I'm saying? Like, support the arts. It's so good for you. It's good for them. It builds community. And you're doing it.
I think it's really important. Right, obviously, for pop music and the acts that you like, I would encourage you to support them. But since I've worked in the media space and love film and television, I would encourage you listening right now, if you have a show that you're watching and you love that show, look that show up on IMDb and find out who that composer is. Seriously, find that show. Who's the composer on White Lotus? Who's the composer on Westworld? Whatever show you're watching right now, just look them up and then see what else they've scored. And I would encourage you, become a fan of some film and TV composer, because that isn't John Williams or Danny Elfman, right? Somebody's hyper famous, and because there's a lot of really talented people working there. And yeah, just become a fan of someone. That's what I would say.
And some of these people will be at the Theatricum this Thursday. Exactly. And then the following Thursday, September 18th, we have Michelle Hasso's When You Speak Love, Kurt Vile in Songs and Letters. We'll take another musical break, and I think if you haven't heard of Kurt Vile, you certainly will have heard of the song I'm about to play, probably his most famous.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old McHeath, dear, and he keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, dear, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old McHeath, so that there's never a trace of red. On the sidewalk, Sunday morning, lies the body just oozing life. Someone's sneaking around the corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know? Oh, we'd see men bags just drooping on down. Well, that scene then is just how it's there for the wait, dear. Five will get you ten, Mackie's back in town. Hear about Louis Miller? Hey, he disappeared now. After drove him out, all of his water cash. And now McKee's been just like a shell. Could it be our boy's done something right? Look out of this lot of linear and a loose
Mystic Pete Chronicles on KXLU 88.9 FM and LA, KXLU.com around the world. We got a little more than 15 minutes left to my show. And then Pat with Alien Air comes on. I hope everybody stays tuned for that. So that was the Brian Seltzer Orchestra performing Mac the Knife. That was indeed music by Kurt Weill from the Three Penny Opera. So that's probably his most famous piece. Wouldn't you say that, Michelle?
Probably that and Speak Low.
Speak Low,
okay.
Would
be the two, I think, that people recognize the most.
And you have the name of the show from Speak Low.
That's right.
When You Speak Love.
Exactly.
So this is September 18th. But you're also in a production of The Seagull by Chekhov.
Yes.
And that's running through the middle of October.
Through October, yes.
Would you do a little monologue from that?
Sure, sure. This is the character of Irina Arkadina. And this is a great little moment where she and Dorn are reading Maupassant. And the rats. Here we are. And the truth is, it's as inadvisable for people in society to fawn over writers and invite them into their homes as it is for a farmer to raise rats in his barn. But people love to do it. When a woman decides she wants to make a conquest of a particular writer, she flatters him, encourages him, like drop upon drop of water, which will eventually pierce the hardest stone. The praise falls word upon word into the susceptible heart of a writer. Once she sees him touched, softened by her constant flattery, one by one she breaks whatever attachments he may have had elsewhere, and little by little she gets him used to staying with her, to yield up his mind to her, shows him off, makes a star of him, and because he feels like an idol, he stays in her temple. Well, maybe that's what the French do, but in America, it's madly in love, then sex. Just get to the point.
A little monologue here on KXLU by Michelle Hasso. By the way, where can people reach you personally?
Oh, I have a website, michellehasso.com.
So I got that internet thing?
Yeah, yeah. It's it's this little box.
It's a box, and it's spelled J-A-S-S-O.
Correct.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from The Seagull.
Yes.
That's being performed along with some other plays throughout the summer. You go to theatricum.com for more information there. What did you want to say, Marshall?
No, just the other plays we're doing.
Plays?
Yeah, no, we have Midsummer Night's Dream. That's a show that we do basically every year. Midsummer Night's Dream, something you should definitely... That's an experience. And then we're doing Much Ado About Nothing, another piece of Shakespeare. Yes, and then this Strife play that I was talking about, that's about unions and that whole experience. And then there's also Wine in the Wilderness, which is another great play about African-American. I don't want to give it away.
Okay. And then you have on the Under the Oaks series on Thursday, September 25th, a tribute to Joni Mitchell.
Yes. No, that's going to be a great evening. That's something we've now been doing for a couple years, which is taking the company members that are in these shows that are normally acting and giving them a chance to sing, because a lot of performers obviously do different things, like Michelle here. And so we basically pick a singer. Like last year, it was Bob Dylan. And then... sort of pass out different songs to the company members. Some of them we do as a group, and it's really, yeah. Hootenanny was the word, sort of just a celebration with the company members and some community members around this singer. And so we'll be doing all sorts of different numbers from Joni Mitchell. And who doesn't like Joni Mitchell? I got to admit, I wasn't a super Joni Mitchell fan before I started working on this project, and I'm sort of in awe of her output and her work. It's really sort of shocking and singular what Joni Mitchell was able to achieve, and I'm glad to be taking some time to get to know her work a little bit better. Insane career, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. All these through the decades, and able to find herself over and over again and make new styles and sort of new creations as her voice changed as well. I'm sort of floored. And so we were able to pick songs, obviously the popular ones, Big Yellow Taxi and all that, obviously got to do those. But I was even more fascinated by the deeper cuts to some of the later stuff that she did. And we'll be highlighting.
She did an album, a jazz album, like Charles Mingus kind of thing.
Yeah, the Mingus album is insane. I'm going to try to do a number from the Mingus album because I think it's so cool and sort of experimental and strange. I feel like there's not a lot of people working in pop that were able to achieve that level of experimentation at that high of a level. Very fascinated by your work.
When she was a younger woman, she had such a clear bell-like tone, this beautiful sound. It just took you to another place, and an extraordinary songwriter.
Yes.
And I think that something happened in the 60s where people were just writing their own songs, and there was just a lot of brilliance. I don't know how to explain this, but it seems like most of the music we're listening to now, it like kind of started somewhere between the 60s and 90s. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of redone, not as well. That's where it all kind of started, like, and this folk rock.
Yeah.
She was one of the real icons of that.
Yeah. A lot of music is stuck in this sort of increasingly smaller Ouroboros where it really is just sort of eating other styles from the past and sort of spitting them out. It seemed like she was doing something different, keeping her own lane and doing her own creativity while still constantly reinventing that creativity. So,
well, either I'm right or I'm just some grumpy old man who's complaining about these young kids and their crappy music.
It's hard to say.
We just had a new guest in studio, Christopher Glenn Gilstrap. Hello, sir.
Hello there. So good to be here.
Apparently, the 405 freeway decided to put up some obstacles.
Yes, it's being repaved.
Okay. And you just came from the theater right now, which we've been talking about for the last 45 minutes. Well, say a word about yourself, and then maybe I can get you to do a little scene with Michelle.
Yeah. Hi there, everyone. So I am Christopher Glenn Gilstrap. I'm a actor, headshot photographer, teacher, children's programs manager, and other things. Originally from central Georgia. I moved to L.A. in 2016.
Okay, so you're an actor, and you lead some of the programs for children at the Theatricum Botanicum.
Mm-hmm, yes, so we do a summer camp. So my age group is ages 4 through 7. So we have our young people's summer camp, which is 3 weeks for ages 4 through 7. And then we also have, starting back up this year, it was our Family Fun Days program, which is a series of 7 original children's theater shows based on world mythology and folklore.
Amazing. Yes. And that's another thing that the Theatricum does is they teach people.
Yes.
They introduce people to theater and you can actually act and perform and then maybe be in one of the shows.
Yeah. So that we bring huge groups of school kids on field trips to come see our shows. We don't have previews like some other equity houses. Our previews, quote unquote, is we perform for these enormous groups of school kids, especially our Shakespeare plays. And sometimes you'll have kids that are introduced to us when they're young coming on these field trips, and then they'll sign up for a class, or they'll sign up for summer camp, and then before you know it, they're a part of the company, and they're acting in our shows.
Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left to this show, but can I get you guys to do a little scene?
Since I already did the monologue from The Seagull, why don't we have Christopher do some Puck? He's been performing the role of Puck in Midsummer for several years.
Okay, Puck is something different from what you find on hockey ice.
Correct, yes. Puck is a hobgoblin, the fairy servant of Oberon, the king of the fairies in A Midsummer Night's Dream.
This is one of Shakespeare's most popular and enchanted plays. Well, okay, you can do a monologue then.
Yes.
Please.
All right. My mistress with a monster is in love. Near to her close and consecrated bower, while she was in her dull and sleeping hour, a crew of patches, rude mechanicals that work for bread upon Athenian stalls, were met together to rehearse a play intended for great Theseus' nuptial day. The shallowest thick skin of that barren sort who Pyramus presented in their sport forsook his scene and entered in a break where I did him at this advantage take an
asses Noel, I fix it on his head. Anon, here's a Thisbe must be answer-ridden. Forth my mimic comes. When they him spy, as wild geese that the creeping fowler eye, or russet-pated chuffs many in sort, rising and cawing at the gun's report, sever themselves and madly sweep the sky, so at his sight away his fellows fly. And at our stamp here, o'er and o'er one falls, he murder cries and help from Athens calls. Their sense thus weak lost with their fears thus strong made senseless things begin to do him wrong. For briars and thorns at their apparel snatch, some sleeves, some hats from yielders, all things catch. I led them on in this distracted fear and left sweet Pyramus translated there, when in that moment so it came to pass Titania waked and straightway loved an ass.
When morning comes to Morven town, the merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning rounds in morning Morgantown. We'll rise up early with the sun to ride the bus while everyone is yawning and the day is young. In morning Morgantown, morning Morgantown, buy your dreams a dollar down. Morning any town you name, morning's just the same. We'll find a table in the shade, sip our tea and lemonade, and watch the morning on parade in morning Morgantown. Ladies in their rainbow fashions, colored stop and go lights flashing, we'll wink at total strangers passing in morning Morgantown.
Music by Joni Mitchell, Morning Morgantown. And before that was a little monologue by Christopher Glenn Gilstrap, G-I-L-S-T-R-A-P. That was Puck from Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. Where can people find you, Christopher?
They can find me at The Gilstrap, which is my last name, on Instagram. So T-H-E-G-I-L-S-T-R-A-P. They can also find me at my headshot photography account, Shots by Gilstrap, at Shots by Gilstrap on Instagram.
Would you like to say a word about the work at the Theatricum? You're working with kids, and just tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see. So Young People's Camp at Theatricum Botanicum. It is. We just found out we're going. It's, it used to be 3 hours. Now it's going to be 4 hours a day. Next year, it'll be the last couple weeks of June, the first week of August. You learn Elizabethan dance, Shakespeare monologues. You learn very silly, very fun, age-appropriate stage combat with pool noodle swords. There's a theater games that you play. There's music. There's puppetry. So that's Young People's Camp, making sure that children from a young age, from in the age 4 through 7 demographic, make sure that they associate joy with this kind of work at a young age, so that they know that when they grow up, they know that there is a place for them in that world once theater becomes more of a specialized interest. And also, even if they never set foot on a stage again, the skills you learn with a theater education are applicable to whatever you do with your life, which is why theater education and arts education funding is so important.
I think young people are learning performance through putting up 15 or 30 second TikTok videos.
Yes.
That's how they are doing theater.
Yes.
How is this any better?
Because it's about the relationships we have with one another, face-to-face, in the absence of screens. Technology, social media, they're all wonderful tools, but there's so much that gets, there's so much artistically and relationally, communally, that gets lost in that.
Well, and I think, like, it's not just for people that want to become performers, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying.
Because I was in the classes yeah. as a kid, and I ended up not becoming an actor, but I think it did a really good job of like socializing me, just being in plays as a young person, because right. then you learn to speak and interact with other people.
Well, you mean actually talking to people has some value?
Yeah, you use your hand like this. We can't see our hands on the radio, but you look at the person. Uh-huh. And these are all things that you can learn.
Imagine.
If you can't do them automatically already.
Figure out how to resolve problems together.
Exactly.
It's not just social skills, although those are important. It's kindness, it's empathy as well.
So there's just one way experience of like into a phone. That doesn't make you a rounded person.
Not entirely.
No. All right.
You can keep trying.
I'm learning. Yeah. I'm learning.
Keep trying. Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Well, final words, guys.
Theatricum Botanicum. There's always a lot going on at Theatricum Botanicum, yeah. and there's so many reasons that I like being there, and it's the plays and mm-hmm. the music, but it's also the crickets and yeah. and the moonlight. The we had this full moon last night, and I was looking up at it coming through the oak trees, and it's sort of shocking. Mm-hmm. Just experiencing nature in that form is something very special to me, but the plays and the music and all of that is also incredibly unique and special, and something that I cherish.
It's a wonderful, wonderful community with a rich history, and it's been my artistic home for 5 years of my life. So I'm very grateful.
I love it. And Michelle Hasso, and you can be found at michellejasso.com.
Yes, and on Instagram, I'm Hasso Hustle. I spell that in a way that I think helps people pronounce my last name. It doesn't seem to really work. It's JASSOJUSTLE. Hasso Hustle. Yeah. Another really wonderful thing about Botanicum, anytime you come to a show there, you can come early, and there are tables and chairs. One can bring a dinner, a sack lunch, a picnic, and have a little bite before and enjoy the grounds, which are magnificent. So that's another perk. The gardens are incredible.
Yeah, it's just a very beautiful place in nature, and it's friendly. You meet people, and even if you're not on stage in one of the programs, you can make friends there. Human beings. I think we need this.
Oh, I've done it.
You've convinced me.
I've done it. You can try. Yeah.
Human beings and sometimes the occasional hobgoblin.
Fuck. Well, I will be back next week with the Mystic Pete Chronicles every Sunday night with another great show. And I have a show Saturday night at 11 p.m. and Monday at midnight, which is called In a Dream, that features the DJ community. Oh, we're very cool people on that show. So please stay tuned to KXLU 24 hours a day. Okay, you could take a break once in a while to get some food or sleep, but it's such a cool little community station. So thank you so much, everybody, for coming. Let's do this again regularly.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Yay.
Yeah, thank you.
Mystic Pete Chronicles.
You're listening to KXLU at LMU 88.9 FM, Los Angeles.